You're listening to the Sphera Now ESG podcast on Spark, Sphera's safety, sustainability, and productivity thought leadership website. Sphera is the leading provider of ESG performance and risk management software, data, and consulting services. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to Sphera Now ESG podcast, a program focused on safety, sustainability, and productivity topics. I'm Rachel Popa, one of Sphera's content marketing managers. Today, we're joined by Sean Daly, Sphera's North American Director of Sustainability Consulting. Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Sean.
Hey, Rachel. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Today, we're discussing Scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions and decarbonizing your supply chain. Tackling Scope 3 emissions continues to be a daunting task for organizations due to lack of quality data and the challenges associated with collecting the necessary data from ever-growing supply chains. But as pressure grows from regulators, investors, stakeholders, and the public to report and disclose greenhouse gas emissions data, the time to get a handle on Scope 3 emissions is now. So Sean, to set the table for this conversation, can you talk us through the three greenhouse gas emissions categories?
Yeah, sure. I think let's start scope one. Greenhouse gas emissions, or GHG emissions, are typically considered what we call direct emissions, meaning that they happen within the four walls of your organization, right? You have control over those. They're associated with typically the consumption of fuel. So if you have company-owned vehicles like trucks or cars, would be the fuel used for those, as well as things like equipment that you might use in your organization that runs on fuel as well. So think natural gas boilers or kilns, propane for forklifts, things like that. And then the third piece of that is really emissions associated with processes like wastewater treatment, or fugitive emissions associated with things like the refrigerants used in heating and air conditioning systems. That's scope one. It's really kind of your direct emissions that are under your control within the four walls of your organization. Scope two greenhouse gas emissions are associated with purchased energy, right? So this is typically in the form of electricity, or in some markets, you know, you might be on what they call district steam. These are considered indirect emissions, given that the impact associated, the emissions generated associated with that is typically offsite in the generation of that energy. Okay, so that's scope two, indirect. Scope three is where it starts getting a little tricky. And scope three emissions are broken up to 15 different categories and represent the emissions in your supply chain, both upstream and downstream. So stuff coming in and stuff going out, right? Scope three emissions have traditionally been a lot more difficult to quantify, and they're difficult, but they also represent the largest category of greenhouse gas emissions for most companies.
Why are scope three emissions more difficult for companies to calculate?
So the difficulty really lies in both getting your hands on the data, acquiring the data, and then the quality of the data, the varying degrees of quality that you're going to get back, right? It involves going out to your suppliers and supply chain and really asking them and partnering with them to basically give you all sorts of data points on, you know, what are their potential scope one and two emissions? What kind of energy are they using? How much energy are they using? Lots of different data points. And as supply chains grow, you know, hundreds of thousands of vendors, you know, this becomes really challenging to manage that, right? So just kind of the scope of what you have to do there has been challenging to folks in recent history. And then the varying quality, right? You know, they might not know exactly what to do. They might not be measuring something that you need to make a decision. So really it just presents all sorts of challenges, both from time management, data collection, organization. It's just really hard for a lot of organizations because everybody's got a day job, right? And their day job might not be making sense of 1,000 suppliers worth of data. Scope one and two greenhouse emissions are the most commonly measured and reported greenhouse gas emissions categories. And many companies have been reporting on these for years, right? So people at this point, or a lot of organizations at this point, are pros at the scope one and two, right? I've been in the sustainability space for about 15 years now. And when I first entered the space, no one was quantifying, or it was extremely rare to find someone quantifying their scope three emissions. Sustainability practitioners, myself included, I'm as guilty as the next person. We're just like, nope, totally impossible for us to get accurate. We're not even going to bother. We're just sticking with scope one and two, and we're just kicking that can down the road, right? We've kicked that can down the road to, you know, far enough. And I think the time is now really to kind of dig into whether there's too many blind spots historically for us to figure out, get a good number. But thanks to, you know, data and tools and things like that, we can start to close up some of those blind spots.
Thank you for that background on that. Going off of what you were saying about the time has now come to start to quantify these things and tackle these things, can you dive into why now is the time to get a handle on scope three emissions?
It's a lot of reasons, really. So first, I would say, and maybe most importantly, industry and public pressure to disclose more and more data around a company's greenhouse gas emissions production. the public wants to know that the companies that they purchase from or, you know, maybe invest in are not only aware of their environmental impact, but that they are actively doing something about it, or at least they are keeping tabs on it, right? So the consumer informs their spending decisions, right? There's all sorts of data points out there that point to people willing to spend more money on companies they view as being more sustainable or greener, kind of being proactive about climate-related issues. For the consumer, it's about spending decisions and faith. It's also driven by access to capital, right? If you are a company and you have investors or you're seeking large loans and things like that, lenders, investors, they view GHG emissions an area of risk. If you are a company and you are quantifying your emissions and have a reduction plan in place, they view that as risk management. GHG emissions represent a potential risk to their return on investment, right? So if they're going to lend you money, if they're going to give you some sort of investment and you don't have a good handle on this, they're going to see that as a threat to their return. So companies that understand their scope 3 emissions and even better have a decarbonization plan in place tend to be viewed less risky of an investment versus competitors not addressing that issue. So I think between public pressure, a little sprinkle in a little bit of regulatory pressure, as well as kind of this investor access to capital angle, really driving the focus and momentum in kind of having more and more companies wanting to report on their scope 3 greenhouse gas at this point.
You mentioned blind spots a minute ago. Can you describe what blind spots companies may have when it comes to their scope 3 emissions in their supply chain?
Yeah, I mean, it turns out that there's quite a few blind spots out there. Historically, there's been two primary strategies for quantifying or calculating your scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions. The first approach requires surveying all of your suppliers and members of your value chain to understand what their scope 1 and 2 emissions are, which informs your scope 3 emissions. So if you're an organization trying to quantify your scope 3 emissions, really your scope 3 emissions to a large degree for some of the categories is basically comprised of your supplier's scope 1 and 2 emissions. As I mentioned before, this is a very, very time-consuming process, as most companies have hundreds, thousands of suppliers that they work with on an annual basis. And even if you get a response from them and data was available, the overall quality is going to vary significantly across the board. And the blind spots end up being incomplete or low quality data. You would have gaps, you would have people trying to report this one data point, but 17 different ways or 150 different ways, right? You never know. You've got these blind spots in that just have potentials for all sorts of poor data quality, missing data, gaps, et cetera. Okay, so that doesn't really give you a very good line of sight into what's actually going on. To help companies that cannot get access to this type of primary data from the suppliers, the World Resources Institute developed an economic input-output model, which basically lets companies estimate their emissions based on the amount of dollars they spend across a given scope 3 category. This is a relatively easy way to estimate emissions because all you need to understand is how much money you spend in that category. So, for example, the category 1 for scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions is purchase goods and services. So basically, if you've got a sharp procurement department, they can run a report, say this is how much money we spent across all of our vendors in the previous year. You could basically land on a number using this World Resource Institute calculator. The challenge with that is that it could be significantly different. It's not that accurate, right? It's really about kind of sticking, it's almost like, you know, you're basically sticking your finger in the wind, just trying to figure out which way it might be blowing. It could be close, it could be way off, just because it's going to be using broad generalization and broad estimates to get you there. And the other thing is, if you're only using dollars spent to calculate your emissions, then the only lever you have at your disposal to reduce emissions that you calculate using that approach is to spend less money in that category, which for most growth motivated companies is not necessarily an option, right? If you make products with steel and you plan on making more steel products as you're going to grow, you can't just stop buying steel or buy a lot less steel. It's not the way that it works. You don't have many options at your disposal to make any kind of real improvements if you're just using a spend calculator. So again, that's another way that, you know, this is a blind spot. You're using data that's broad estimates that you don't really have a lot of insight into how to actually make improvements.
So if these two methods lead to these emissions blind spots in the supply chain and also emissions reporting, how do you close those gaps?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that there are a couple ways that you can go about doing, but I think the strongest way is really, and what we're finding is more and more, is that leveraging life cycle assessment data to fill in those gaps. So you can use life cycle assessment to understand that impact, right? So for example, there are tens of thousands of emissions factors and emissions data sets out there that represent all manner of raw materials, finished products, energy generation, waste processing, recycling. There's all sorts of emissions factors and data sets out there that are specific to given products and processes and materials. Leveraging those data sets not only helps you find the overall impact of that widget, right, that widget that we're talking about, but further, it helps you understand what phase of the production of that widget represents the greatest area of impact.
So you've gone over a few different approaches here so far. I was wondering if you could dive into some other different approaches you've seen to use life cycle assessments for decarbonization.
I guess the first way that it's probably traditionally been used is really to understand the impact, the greenhouse gas impact or climate impact of the products you make. So if you're thinking about decarbonization for your organization, part of it is to understand, A, the inputs and outputs that go into your production process. So that's basically like what kind of energy and fuel are used to make the products that I make. And the second thing is to understand kind of in its use, what's the potential product? So if you have an electronic device, if there's something else that has some sort of emissions associated with the use of that product, you know, it quantifies that as well. So there you have two different ways, the use phase and the production phase, that life cycle assessment informs or identifies opportunities for you to make improvements. So you can make adjustments that would facilitate the product using less energy to make or less raw materials to make that product. And then on the use side, you can build in kind of whether it's, you know, efficiencies or things like that to make the product more efficient or less energy intensive to use, resulting in less emissions as well. Okay, so that's one way, it's just focused on the product side. It also helps you understand the impact of the products you purchase. So similarly, if you know you're purchasing raw materials like steel or fiber pulp or whatever, you know, plastic resins, there's life cycle assessment data out there that will help folks understand, you know, the overall impact of those raw materials that you're purchasing, right? And the products you purchase, you know, whether it's, you know, a lot of us are in business services organizations. You're not making a widget, you're providing a service. It's knowledge capital. And for there, it's maybe like equipment and things like that, laptops and cell phones. There's life cycle assessment data there for that as well. So in understanding the impact of the products you purchase can help you make informed choices on what you're purchasing and what's going to have the least amount of impact. And then finally, understanding the impact of both upstream and downstream transportation. So what's the impact of getting materials and raw goods and things like that to your organization? And then how do you get, if you're a manufacturer in particular, how do you then transport that to the next, you know, point of sale or the next point in the supply chain? So using those three areas really right there are ways that you can use life cycle assessment to make some decisions to help you reduce your overall impact in a couple of different areas.
As we've been through previously on the podcast so far, this is, you know, a really complex process. So I was wondering if you could give some advice to companies who are starting on this journey who want to leverage life cycle assessment data.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, and this is very important, you know, get to know scope three greenhouse gas emissions a bit. I mean, in particular, scope one and two, I feel like a lot of folks, it's a little bit easier to digest and a lot of folks are already kind of up to speed on it, but scope three gets tricky. So spend some time with it, read through the greenhouse gas protocols guidance documents on the subject. They'll give you a good feel for what's involved, the different categories, and some examples, you know, through this. So when then you can kind of then leverage that into, you know, starting your journey, right? Secondly, identify which scope three emissions categories are likely material to your business. And that's where you'll need to focus, right? So if you are a business services organization, like I just said, you're not making a product. So the impact of the products, you know, product use is not going to be a material topic. So don't worry about it, right? That's step two, is really just kind of understanding what's material to your business. And then finally, get help. It's a daunting task, right? You know, get friendly with your suppliers, talk with peers in terms of, you know, what they're doing, what they've been successful with, do some benchmarking. And then, you know, if you need, you know, additional support, get that help, right? Tracking down life cycle assessment data in the wild, so to speak, can be a time-consuming activity, right? So if you need to bring in partners with better tools or available data, that'll make the process of identifying the correct data to use a lot easier in most cases. So don't be afraid to ask for help should it get to that.
Talked a lot about data in this podcast so far. My question is, can companies quantify scope three emissions even if they don't have quality data?
Yeah, I mean, you can at least get started. The greenhouse gas protocol allows for and understands that, you know, there's going to be imperfect or unavailable data out there. So proxies and estimations are valid approaches as long as they have some rigor behind them, right? So we talked about using economic input output models. We talked about using estimations and things like that. That's all fine and well to get you started. The economic input output model that uses spend that we discussed, you know, it's a place to get started and gives you some directional guidance. But in either case, you can only do so much with these types of estimates. So that's why you could also employ a hybrid approach where maybe you're using one of these estimation methods, but supplementing it with life cycle assessment data for the areas where it's available and it makes sense to use it. That gives you stronger numbers to be able to at least give you a more accurate representation of what your estimated scope 3 emissions will be versus strictly relying on estimation tools.
Great. I think you've given us a great overview of this process that I think our audience will find very helpful. Do you have any final thoughts before we close out the podcast?
Yeah, I guess, you know, now more than ever, there are internal pressures on an organization to be as transparent as possible in their GHG emissions reporting. Stakeholders clearly see GHG emissions tied to risk and reputation. So there's more and more scrutiny that companies are coming under related to this topic. And scope 3 emissions can be the elephant in the room, given that it typically represents the vast majority of a company's overall greenhouse gas emissions, right? Anywhere from, you know, 60%, 90%, 99%, right? So it typically represents the bulk of a company's emissions. So while it can be a big, scary number to deal with, and maybe not something that everybody's excited about, you know, kind of publishing out there in the world, the difficulty of getting accurate data makes it even more tough. More and more companies will be compelled to both measure and report these emissions in accurate, transparent, and scientifically sound ways, though. You know, I mean, it's just investors, regulators, the public at large, that's what they want. And that's where a life cycle assessment can really contribute to a company's efforts there. It was sound data that enables companies to identify strategic areas of focus for reduction efforts. So really providing that catalyst to make real impactful changes and decarbonize.
Well, great. Thanks again, Sean, for joining us today on the Sphera Now ESG podcast.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you for listening to the Sphera Now ESG podcast on Spark. We hope you enjoyed the show. Want more safety, sustainability, and productivity-related blogs and podcasts? Subscribe to Spark today. Visit sphera.com/spark and let's spark a conversation.